I'm Andy Bienstock. Welcome back to The Signal. Last week at the Creative Alliance's Patterson Theater, a packed audience witnessed the debut of a new live storytelling series called The Stoop. Seven storytellers got 7 minutes each to recount a true tale based on the night's theme, Legends of the Fall, Stories About Failure. The Stoop's organizers were kind enough to allow us here at The Signal to make a recording of the event, and today we're happy to broadcast one of the evening's most powerful stories. Laura Lippman is best known to Baltimore and the literary world as a critically acclaimed mystery novelist and award-winning author of the Tess Monahan series. Lippman grew up in Baltimore, and before her fiction career took off, she worked as a reporter at The Sun for 12 years. She jokes that they were 11 of the happiest years of her life.
So, like everyone else here, I've been thinking a lot about American Idol lately. But what I've been thinking about is the people who, in the parlance of the show, don't go through to Hollywood. I'm not talking about the wonderfully bad ones, the ones who at least get 24 hours of infamy in the next day news cycle. I'm talking about the ones we don't see. Because if you think about it, tens of thousands of people try out for that show every year, and we don't see most of them. Not because they're not good enough, but also because they're not bad enough. Every now and then they let just one of them into the auditions, and they're just ordinary. They're forgettable. They're the ones who are told they're a little pitchy dog. And you can see how they thought they could carry a tune. You can see how they made the leap to thinking they were America's next top idol. I mean, I know we all understand that not all pop singers have great technical skills or huge ranges, but these people don't even have that. I mean, they can't even do what Rex Harrison did, which is raise talk singing to an art form. You know, most people remember that Rex Harrison did that in My Fair Lady. I've always thought it was far more impressive that he did it in Dr. Dolittle. He had to sing a love song to a seal. When I look in your eyes, I see the wisdom of the world in your eyes. I see the sadness of a thousand goodbyes when I look in your eyes. You don't remember that because it's not bad enough. See, that's the thing. Failure is kind of beautiful. Failure is spectacular. Failure is memorable. Failure is Lucille Ball in the candy factory, and the conveyor belt is backing up, and she's putting chocolate in her apron and chocolate in her bra and chocolate in her mouth, and she's fired by the end of the shift. Failure is a story, every time you tell it, it gets better. What's really bad is mediocrity, which is private and ordinary. Mediocrity is like body odor or a piece of toilet paper stuck to your shoe. Mediocrity is something that happens behind a closed door most of the time. In August of 2000, I was sitting behind a closed door at the Baltimore Sun, where I had then worked for 11 years, 6 years as a feature reporter. And my boss was telling me that I was essentially being demoted. I was being sent to Cityside. I was being sent out to the county to cover whatever they could find for me to cover in Towson. I tried to argue my way out of it. I pointed out that I had the second highest byline count in my department. They're not the right kind of bylines, my boss said to me. I was going through a bad year. I was going through a divorce, a painful divorce. If your divorce isn't painful, you're a sociopath, so at any rate. I remembered that I'd done some really good stories that year. I said, what about the story that everyone loved, the one about the woman selling her wedding dress in the classifieds, or the guy who bought the engagement ring at the last minute on Christmas Eve? Interesting that those are the stories I was drawn to during that year in my life. And he said, well, you didn't do enough of them. And finally he said, look, Laura, the consensus is you no longer do your best work. Maybe that's connected to the fact that I was writing a book a year outside the paper. Maybe not. At any rate, that was the decree, and off to Towson I went. Now, the ugly thing about human nature, well, I guess I can just speak for my own, is that when things like that happen to people, things that seem arbitrary and capricious and unfair, you really need to tell yourself that they're not. And a lot of my colleagues accepted the fact that I had been transferred because I wasn't doing my best work, because they needed to. And they told me to get over it, move on. I remember being told that less than 2 weeks after that happened, and I thought, you know, this is a lot like what I'm going through in my personal life, too. I felt like I'd entered this place called the secret club of divorce, the place where everyone else knew that the little two-line cause and effect story that you told other people was nowhere near the whole truth. And the other thing you knew is that no one wanted to hear the whole truth. Now, the Baltimore Sun is a union newspaper. And at a union newspaper, punitive transfer is prohibited. And telling someone they're not doing their best work and sending them out to Towson could be construed as a punitive transfer. So I did something a lot of reporters didn't do. I filed a grievance. But the paradox of the grievance was not that I would prove I was, in fact, doing my best work. It was that I would prove that my boss said that to me. And so management took their side, and they argued that I wasn't doing my best work, and this is why this had happened to me. And the union took their side, and they said, you said it, you did it, this is unfair. And the process dragged on for almost a year, heading to arbitration. And I set out in Towson, crummy little grade grubber that I was, trying to write better stories, trying to remove the stink of that accusation. And sounded like that out in Towson. I guess I was doing a pretty good job. I guess I was actually beginning to show them that I could do good work, because a rumor went around that if I could just be humble enough and nice enough, they would bring me back downtown and give me a better job. My father worked at the Baltimore Sun for 30 years, and he said, you know this is how this works. You know it's cyclical, and you'll just come around again. And I said, yeah, I know, but Daddy, I am really tired of riding the Catherine wheel. That's a torture device for those of you who don't know. And so, in November of 2001, I ended two dysfunctional relationships in the same week. On Monday, I signed the paperwork that decided how the financial assets of my marriage would be allocated. On Wednesday, I signed what to this day I have to call a confidential agreement, severing my other relationship with my employer of 12 years. I do know I can tell you this. The next week, I bought a new car. The next year, I bought a new house. And I don't need a lawyer's permission to tell you that my first year away from my job at the paper, I wrote a book that changed my life. I wrote a book that became my first national bestseller, first book to be optioned by film, a book that was praised by writers as diverse as Stephen King and Nick Hornby, a book that, in essence, quintupled my Baltimore Sun salary. But the thing that happened when I took that confidential agreement is that I never got to wipe that black mark off my record. I never got them to say that they were wrong in what they said about me. Now, you may think not doing your best work is not the most scathing indictment. You might think you could live with it. But I'll tell you, it hurts more in some ways than an out-and-out failure. Not doing your best work is what they tell you when you're just a little bit pitchy dog. Not doing your best work is what they tell you when they just don't love you anymore and they want you to go away. Thank you.
Mystery novelist Laura Lipman sharing the story in front of a live audience at Baltimore's Patterson Theater last week. Lipman was one of seven guest storytellers who participated in the debut event of The Stoop, a new live storytelling series organized and hosted by Laura Wexler and Jessica Henkin. In the interest of full disclosure, Jessica just happens to be married to our producer Aaron Henkin, which we suspect might have helped out when we asked them permission to record and broadcast their event. We thank The Stoop and storyteller Laura Lipman for being part of our program today, and you can find out how to become a part of The Stoop yourself as an audience member or a storyteller online at stoopstorytelling.com.